You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking round the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry.
Here's an email for you. Match you pretty hard on the Navy.
The little man. I go back now, the stores are empty. Except an old Coke sign dated 19.
Every article I read talks about their operational tempo.
Like they never existed. Or renovated and called historic distance.
And I only think it makes sense what's going on in the Navy if you've deployed, if you've operated at that tempo. Most have not, and when they hear Senator McCain bitching about the 100-hour work week, they take it seriously. They don't realize that on deployments, and I'm not talking about 2 weeks before a port visit, I'm talking about 7 months of being in combat. Or if you're in a headquarters element that's engaged, even longer than that. Learning how to manage those hours and lead under those conditions. In my opinion, for whatever reason, the 7th Fleet of the United States Navy has failed the nation in that. All this bullshit about operational tempo. That's when leaders lead. That's when leaders make their money. And I absolutely agree with you. Young people get off work, and what do they want to do? They go play video games and they go watch movies. They don't go to sleep. That's why you need leaders. To make sure that those things happen. I'm not sure that the Navy is going to get where it needs to go. By themselves on their own analysis. My own opinion is that they are lost. And they need additional rudder steer from somebody outside of that organization. I think even Shkogel's comments are laced with it. He believes the operational piece of it. Hell, they haven't been to war. Oh, really? They've got to paint? And they've got to stand watch? Give me a break. The Navy does have a cultural problem. We've seen it. They become soft, and they don't like to put the heavy hand on people because everybody's got their rights. The Navy needs to get back to the way it used to be, which are those chiefs didn't take shit from anybody. They knew the sailors in their section. And it was a bit of a dictatorship. It wasn't certainly a democracy. We'll see what happens. At the end of the day, I believe that the Secretary of Defense is going to have to sic his own people on the Navy to get them to where they need to be. We'll see what happens. Enjoyed Shkogel. I have not checked out Task and Purpose. I will in the future, though. He writes good stuff, and I respect the work that he's done that I've read. You hear those statements made by people about the 100-hour work week, and then you start doing the math on what you did when you were deployed, And it's a whole lot fucking more than 100 hours a week, I'll tell you that. And people are getting whacked, too. So you're leading under that, in that environment, under that kind of pressure every day. Okay? It's not painting and chipping. It's not getting qualified for your next rate. I think that's what they call it. It's not that. It's people getting killed. It's that. Oh. Yeah, so I don't, again, they can make all the excuses they want for operational tempo. Trust me, their rubber band certainly hasn't been spinning at the rate that the Marine Corps' rubber band has been spinning. Next question, why is all of this resident in the 7th Fleet? Why aren't we seeing the other fleets of the United States Navy with the same issues? Hmm. Anyway, let's see. Let me go back to again. I'm not Navy bashing because the Marine Corps, and this is my opinion, the Marine Corps is going down the same road. Everybody's got rights. We don't inspect field days. You can send a text and get out of and if you're late for formation. That is the road to an undisciplined force. That is the road to more people getting killed. That is a bad road. You don't want to be on that. You don't want to be on that road. Trust me. But what do I know? I could be wrong. But, you know, the people I talk to, I mean, have done this for a long time. And they're smart. They're smart men and women. They pay attention. And they've been made tough by life's demands, a lot of them in combat, on them. And they don't suffer bullshit well. And, again, there's a famous interview, an interview I did with Eric Smith, who's now the CG of the 1st Marine Division, and he was the battalion commander of 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, in Ramadi in 2005. And he's fired up when we do it. And he said, hey, look, you know, my job here is to give these Marines what they need. What do they need? They get off patrol. They need to fill sandbags. They need to clean their weapons. They need to clean the cruisers. They need to PM the vehicles. And then they need to go to sleep after they eat and maybe work out. Okay, that's what they need. So that's what I give them. What do they want? They want to come home. They want to throw their weapons on their racks, and they want to play video games and watch movies. That's what they want. I can't have that. My responsibility is too great to them and to their family. So if you won't put an end to that kind of stuff, if you won't supervise sleep, if you won't make sure your NCOs are doing that, then guess what you get? You get what they want. And it's not good. It is not good. So, again, interesting stuff in terms of the culture and, again, just the structure of the culture. The structure of the culture, does it allow for that? Can you be hard on them? They come to you now, and they come from an undisciplined culture. The number one question they get asked in school is, how did that make you feel? So that's is that a good thing? I don't think so. So what is the most important thing in my life? Of course, it's the way I feel. It's my feelings. Are you crazy? So, what do you do with those people institutionally? They need more structure. They need better leadership. They need more discipline. And again, I don't mean draconian leadership. But that's certainly part of it, to get their attention, to get them to behave. So it makes sense, right? All of that is a part of growing what you need in young people. And again, the Marine Corps' unique challenge, and we talked about it with Schogel, is the Marine Corps' unique challenge is that the force is 60% under the age of 26. That's, you know, if you enlist at the age of 18, 19, 20, that's a two-term enlistee. 60% of that force is turning over. under the age is under the age of 26. So, right. So the majority of your force isn't novice, right? Which what I would tell you is first term. Second term is what? A junior intermediate professional. Okay. They've been around the block one time, maybe half of a second time. Okay. And now they're coming back and they're going to do it again. Okay. So that's the unique challenge for the Marine Corps, is how do you do this with a force that turns over this much and is this young? So anyway, and let me tell you, somebody sent me an email. You're going to get in trouble because it sounds like you're minimizing Marines United. No, I'm certainly not trying to minimize Marines United. But the other part is this. Let's open our eyes and let's get to the facts. And let's deal with the facts, not the hysteria. Okay? The facts are that a very, very small number of active duty Marines participated in that. Does that screw up the narrative? Maybe it does, but I don't care. What's the truth? Deal with the truth. The deal with the truth is, okay, so let's just... Let me do a fraction for you. Okay. So let's just say it's 20 active duty Marines were involved in that at the end of the day. And I think that number might even be big. Okay. So that divided by 240,000 equals 0.000000, right? Yeah, it doesn't even come up on my calculator. It's 8.3 to the minus fifth. Like, I don't even know what that number is. Okay, so let me just give it to you in. I'll have to do it in a spreadsheet, okay? 20 divided by 240,000, which is active duty and reserve Marines. On reserve, active, it does the same thing. 8.3 to the minus fifth. So, yeah. So it gives you some sense of how small that number is. I don't like that. I don't want some kind of exponential bullshit number. What is that? Okay, so now that I'm messing with it, as a percentage, it's 0.008. Yeah, it's no part of your Marine Corps is participating in that. Okay? Now, does a point need to be made that you can't do that? Absolutely. But my point is this. You know, there's certain hot-button social issues that get inflamed by social media, and then there's people in Congress that will further inflame them. Okay? Does it need to be corrected? Yeah, but can we keep it between the white lines? And the answer to that is probably not. Probably not. All right, let me go back to the early bird. Couple more stories in Military Times. Number four story on Military Times is a new Trump order focused on preventing suicide among new veterans. So we've talked about that a little bit, but just to recap, the president signed an executive order that does a number of things relative to transition and services for veterans that are newly separated, we did the 538, the website the statistical analysis of numbers, right? And we've done that relative to gun violence. The best estimate by the VA is that 20 veterans a day take their lives nationwide. However, more than 50% of those are, I want to say, over the age of 45. Okay, which lines up with the gun violence thing that says the majority of gun deaths in America are suicide. The majority of those are men, white men over the age of 45. So what does that speak to? Mental health. So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about mental health. But we're not talking about mental health in terms of when you look at veteran suicide. The largest demographic are older veterans. Yeah. However, this initiative focuses on preventing suicide in active duty members as they transition and then are out of the military for between 0 and 24 months. All right. So anyway, the new executive order will require two bureaucracies, the VA and the Defense Department, in addition to Homeland Security, establish new plans for seamless mental health care for troops leaving military service. Right, so it'll involve the way you transition. It will also involve the different services that are available as you transition and when those services expire. Senator Marco Rubio from Florida ran for president, obviously beaten by Donald Trump. He has three theories about who launched the whatever types of attack was done to damage State Department veterans in Cuba. Though theories vary on what caused 24 U.S. embassy employees and their families to experience brain damage after hearing bizarre noises in their residences in late 2016 and early 2017, Senator Marco Rubio theorized recently that there are three possible answers to who perpetrated the attacks. Quote, Senator Rubio, whoever did this because they wanted there to be friction between the U.S. and the Cuban government. That would be the motivation behind this. One, anti-Castro Cuban groups. Groups within Cuba opposed to Cuban leader Raul Castro's regime could have perpetuated these attacks as a means of damaging the government's initiatives to establish more open dialogue with the U.S. Doing so could harm the Castro regime's credibility. Two, a rogue faction within the Cuban government. Rubio noted that the Castro regime's efforts to open dialogue with the U.S. in recent years makes it unlikely that they would also attempt to attack U.S. officials directly. However, there could be a faction within the government that wished to go back to the country's old ways of dealing with the U.S. and took action to sour the relationship. Rubio quoted a September 15, 2017 Associated Press news story as evidence for a rogue government group not aligned with Castro perpetrating the attack. Quote, in a rare face-to-face conversation, Castro told U.S. diplomat Jeffrey DeLorenzo that he was equally baffled and concerned. Predictably, Castro denied any responsibility, but U.S. officials were caught off guard by the way he addressed the matter, devoid of the indignant, how dare you accuse us attitude the U.S. has come to expect from Cuban leaders. This time, although Castro denied involvement, his government didn't dispute that something troubling may have gone down on Cuban soil. Interesting. Three, a third-party nation state. This is according to Marco Rubio. Quote, if it wasn't a rogue element within the Castro government, then maybe it was a third country. The logical conclusion is Russia and Vladimir Putin. Russia targeted embassies, U.S. embassies, with microwaves before. In a 2012 article written by J. Mark Elwood and published in Environmental Health Notes, from 1953 to 1976, beams of microwaves from 2.5 to 4.0 gigahertz were aimed at the U.S. Embassy building in Moscow and originated from Soviet sources. In 1997, New York Times reported that the Soviet Union stopped the bombardment to improve relations before a June meeting with Jimmy Carter. These attacks are sophisticated, Rubio said. So sophisticated, as I've said, we can't even describe how they happen. So that's number five on on the early bird. There's a surface warfare symposium going on. So the Navy talking about its surface warfare issues, and Oprah's even invaded the early bird under the heading Overseas Operations. Oprah as Commander-in-Chief. Here's what she had to say about the Iraq War. So you got that going for you. Unbelievable, Oprah. And every story that is a resident in the early bird relative to the Marine Corps has already been covered in Marine Corps Times. So we'll skip that. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear about 47 minutes of audio that occurred yesterday. And I'll bomb in and out of it in terms of my own personal comment. But if you didn't hear it, I want you to hear it because it's very interesting stuff. It deals with our southern border and negotiations that the president conducted yesterday. So I had the TV on and it came on, and you know, you normally see that, and then the president will make comments, blah, 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 and then the media gets ushered out. Well, that didn't happen. And so you're like, well, what's going on? And so, but the TV's muted, so you can't really tell. And it stayed on. And it stayed on. And it stayed on. And so you caught my attention, like, well, what's going on? But I was doing this, so it was. I think we took the first couple minutes, but it just kept going and going, like the Energizer Buzzy Bunny. It just kept going, so it was amazing in terms of that. And I then got a chance to watch the whole thing, and equally as amazing as you watched it. The things the president said, the things they said in open forum. So you're going to get a chance to listen to that in its entirety. And I would tell you, if you only caught snippets of it yesterday, don't touch that dial. Just sit back, relax, enjoy it, because you'll find it riveting. I did. So, and if I did, come on, you certainly should. So, with that said, on a Wednesday, more of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoffoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. All right, we continue. The audio you're going to hear next took place yesterday. And, you know, I'm sure when you went home last night, as most people are, they're busy. And when you're busy, you don't really have time to watch this kind of stuff. So I'm going to endeavor to go ahead and play this for you, if I can make it all work. So bear with me as I tee it up. And it happened kind of impromptu yesterday, but it was essentially the President of the United States going into a negotiating session. And we see this all the time where the press is welcomed in, and then the press is ushered out, very shortly. So here's what happened.
It seems to me not much has actually changed here in terms of your positions.
No, I think it's changed. I think my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it. because I respect them. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Okay, so now, so that's what you would expect, right? Okay, so then what happened was the following. People, they thought that this was, you know, that the media was going to get ushered out of the room. Okay. But it went on.
Donald Trump and my family was very nice. No, I like Oprah. I don't think she's going to run. I don't think she's going to run. I know her very well.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President.
Let's wait about that for the president. Yeah, it's phase two. I think comprehensive will be phase two. I think I really agree with Dick. I think we get the one thing done, and then we go into comprehensive the following day. I think it'll happen.
All right, thank you. Thank
you, Ken. Yes. Well, wait, let's
wait 1 second.
Thank you all very much. I hope we gave you enough material. This should cover you for about 2 weeks.
So he waves goodbye, right? And, but I'm not sure what happened, but they don't leave. And so you know, you see all these different news shows. They cut back to their regular programming, and then a few minutes later, they go back to the White House, and as the media is allowed to remain in that room where you have senators and congressmen. I want to say it was 15 senators and 10 congressmen. And so this is the exchange that you heard that went on, and it's very interesting.
Reform,
there are many of these young people who are losing the protection of DACA on a daily basis. As of March 5th, 1,000 a day will lose DACA protection. 900 of them are members of the U.S. military. 20,000 of them are school teachers. In my state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, there are 25 of them in medical school who can't apply for a residency if they lose their DACA status. So lives are hanging in the balance of our getting the job done. We've got the time to do it. In a matter of days, literally of days, we can come together and reach an agreement.
Okay, that is Dick Durbin, okay? Senator from Illinois.
And when that happens, I think good things will happen in other places, and we'll see some real progress here in Washington.
I agree with that, Dick. I very much agree with that. Tom, would you like to say something? Tom Cotton.
Senator Tom Cotton.
I'm reminding us all here, and I'm glad to be here with Democrats and with House members as well. You know, I think on this issue, there's a lack of trust, and has been for many years. A lack of trust between Republicans and Democrats, a lack of trust among Republicans, most fundamentally a lack of trust between the American people and our elected leaders on not delivering solution for many, many years about some of these problems.
Now, again, this is 25 senators and congressmen, Democrats and Republicans, sitting around the table. And like I said, I started listening to it, and I'm like, oh, man, listen to this stuff. But I'll tell you what, it was awesome, and I think the reaction overnight was overwhelmingly positive by the American people. Hey, we want to see this kind of grown-up, measured dialogue, and we want to see you push the ball further down the road. What just happened? So, again, Senator Tom Cotton, who's bright, young veteran of the United States Army.
And I hope that this meeting can be the beginning of building trust between our parties, between the chambers, because I know for a fact all the Republicans around the table are committed to finding a solution, and I believe all the Democrats are as well. So I think this is a good first step in building the trust we need for a good bill, Mr. President, that will achieve the objectives that you stated. Providing legal protection for the DACA population while also securing our border and ending chain migration and the diversity lottery. Thank you for the invitation.
Mr. President, thank you very much for having us down here. I agree with Tom Cotton that the American public...
Okay, this is Representative Steny Hoyer. Okay, I believe Steny is a Democrat, but he's a congressman.
Are very frustrated with us. One of the reasons they're frustrated with us because we continue to couple things on which we have large agreement with things on which we do not agree. This is a perfect example of that. 86% of the American people in the most recent poll are for ensuring, as you have said, not providing for DACA protected kids to go to a place that they don't know, they didn't grow up in, and it's not their home. They're Americans. They don't have a piece of paper that says they're Americans, but they're Americans. And it seems to me, Mr. President, if we're going to move ahead in a constructive way, that we take that on which we agree, pass it. The American public will be pleased with all of us if we do that. Just as in September, you recall, we did the extension of a CR. No drama. We were all for it. Four leaders met. We came to an agreement, and we passed that CR. In my view, we can pass the protection in the, what I understand your position is, procedurally it was not done correctly. You then, as Dick has said, challenged us, pass it correctly. If it's put on the floor, Mr. President, I believe it will have the overwhelming majority in both the House, and Senator Graham thinks it will have a substantial majority in the United States Senate as well. That, I think, is the first step, Tom, to creating some degree of confidence. Democrats are for security at the borders. I want to state that emphatically. There is not a Democrat that is not for having secure borders. There are obviously differences, however, Mr. President, on how you affect that. You just indicated that yourself. And you indicated this would be a first step, and then we continue to talk, as we're talking today, about how we best secure the border. There are differences of opinion within your party and within our party. So I would urge that we move forward on protecting the DACA protected individuals. Young people, young adults, as you pointed out in one of your statements, who are productive parts of our community. That we protect them and get that done. And then, because I think everybody around the table, as you pointed out, is for security, and then the issue is going to be how do we best affect that border security. So I would urge us to move, as Senator Durbin has urged us to move, on the DACA students. As a matter of fact, the Speaker, I think today, but maybe yesterday, said we need to solve the DACA issue, and we need to solve it in a way that is permanent, not temporary. And I agree with him on that issue.
An interest.
Okay, now you're going to see the disconnect grow here, but it's, again, it's riveting discussion. The disconnect is between people who say, let's deal with the DACA people now, and then we'll deal with border security later. The only leverage the people who want, the Republicans and the president being the man who said we're going to build a wall, have is the leverage of we won't allow anything to go forward on DACA unless it's accompanied by security. And Lindsey Graham will make that argument here in a minute. But just so you know, there's a disconnect in the room between what we're talking about, let's deal with DACA. When the president says let's deal with DACA, border security is included with that. They are done in the same piece of legislation. So here you go.
Interestingly, when you say that, President Obama, when he signed the executive order, actually said he doesn't have the right to do this. And so you do have to go through Congress, and you do have to make it permanent. Whether he does, whether he doesn't, let's assume he doesn't. You said it, and that was a temporary stopgap. I don't think we want that. I think we want to have a permanent solution to this, and I think everybody in this room feels that way very strongly.
What happened, Mr. President, I think, is that the Senate passed a comprehensive immigration bill, as you know. We did not consider it in the House, so we didn't reach those issues. Very frankly, on border security, Mr. McCall, the chairman of the committee, reported out a unanimous security solution, which we then included in the bill that we filed on comprehensive immigration reform. So I think we can reach agreement.
Well, I also think that after we do DACA, and I really believe we should be able to be successful, I really think we should look in terms of your permanent solution and to the whole situation with immigration. I think a lot of people in this room would agree to that also, but we'll do it in steps. And most people agree with that, I think, that we'll do it in steps. Even you said, let's do this, and then we go phase two. Kevin, what would you like to say?
Well, first, I want to thank you for bringing everybody together. You got the Senate, you got the House, you got both parties. And I like the exchange of ideas. And I think everybody has a point here. The one thing I don't want to have happen here is what I saw in the past. There were former bills that were passed on border security years ago that never got finished. There are immigration bills passed that were right back at the table with the same problem. Let's make a commitment to each one, and most importantly to the American people, that when we get done and come to an agreement, that we're not back at this problem 3-4 years from now.
Okay, this is a majority leader in the House, Kevin McCarthy, congressman from California, from the Bakersfield area. He has the floor now. So these are the kind of guys that are at the thing. He's a Republican, by the way.
That's why, yes, we've got to do DACA, and I agree with you 100%. But if we do not do something with the security, if we do not do something with the chain migration, we...
Okay, so my recording ends there. Hold on, but don't go anywhere. We're going to take about a two-minute break, and we'll tee that back up and more on All Marine Radio. Of an absolutely riveting discussion that took place yesterday. If you didn't have a chance to listen to it all, you'll hear it here. So don't touch that dial. You'll hear Representative McCarthy, and it continues on for about another, half hour. So don't go anywhere. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project.
San Francisco last night willing to block the rescission.
More leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. All right, you're going to hear, we're going to restart it, so it's another segment, okay? It ended at the top of the hour. I had to tee the second segment up. Here is Representative Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, so he's a Republican from California, talking about both DACA and security.
That we're not back at this problem 3-4 years from now. That's why, yes, we've got to do DACA, and I agree with you 100%. But if we do not do something with the security, if we do not do something with the chain migration, we are fooling each other that we solved the problem. You know how difficult this issue is. So let's collectively, we're here at the table together. I'll be the first one to tell you we're all going to have to give a little, and I'll be the first one willing to. But let's solve the problem, but let's not tell the American public at the end that it's solved when it's not.
Well, I think a good starting point would be Bob Goodlatte, who has done a bill, and I understand you're ready to submit it, and you're going to take that, and you'll submit, and they'll negotiate in Congress and the House, and then it goes to the Senate, and they'll negotiate, both Republican and Democrat, but it could be a good way of starting. Now, if anyone has an idea different from that, but I think starting in the House might be good. You're ready? I think you're ready to go.
We are.
I would like to add the words merit into any bill that's submitted, because I think we should have merit-based immigration like they have in Canada, like they have in Australia, so we have people coming in that have a great track record as opposed to what we're doing now, to be honest with you. But I think merit-based should be absolutely added to any bill, even if it has to do with DACA. That would be added to the things I said. I think it would be popular. I think I can tell you the American public very much wants that. But, Bob, where are you with the bill?
So tomorrow, Chairman McCall
and Congressman McSally and Congressman Labrador, we're the chairman of the two committees and the chairman of the two subcommittees, are going to introduce a bill that addresses the DACA concerns. And let me thank you, Mr. President, both. I was an immigration lawyer before I was elected to Congress. I want to thank you both for campaigning on securing our borders and the interior of our country, but also on addressing DACA in a way that makes sense. Don't do it ad hoc. Do it through the congressional process. So you've challenged us, and we should step up to that challenge. And we're going to do it in a bipartisan fashion, but we have to put our best foot forward, and we're going to do that with this legislation. It's going to address DACA in a permanent way, not a temporary short-term thing. We're going to address the border enforcement and security and the wall. We're going to address Mr. McCall's bill. We're going to address interior enforcement, but not everything that the administration had on its list. We're going to address chain migration. We're going to end the visa lottery program. We're going to address sanctuary cities and Kate's Law. We think it is a good bill that will both address the two things our speaker told us right after you made your decision, which is we have to address the problem we have with the DACA kids being in limbo, as Dick Durbin described it, and I agree with that. But we also have to make sure this does not happen again.
And Dick, you're and the Democrats.
Okay, so that is Representative Bob. Hold on, let me. I don't know who this guy is. Bob Goodlatte, Godlatte. He is a Republican from Virginia, and he. Let's see, he's 65 years old, born in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Now lives in Virginia. He's currently the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. So, anyway, that was just him. He's introducing legislation today. All right, so it continues.
You have a lot of things that they're not going to agree. You're going to talk to us about it. I just felt that this is something that was long overdue. You'd have a meeting and you'd say, this is what we want. We'd have a meeting. And this has been going on for years. And I just, you know, at a certain point, maybe I'll just lock the doors and I won't let anybody in until they come and agree. Michael, do you have something to say about the bill?
Yeah, I've been in Congress for seven terms. I've been trying to get this border secure for seven terms in Congress. I think this is a bipartisan issue. I think DACA is a bipartisan issue. We have an opportunity, I think, before us to get this done for the American people. When it comes to chain migration and the lottery system, we saw two recent terror attacks in New York that were the result of this, I think, failed immigration policy. We'd like to see that fixed for the American people, and along with, as Bob talked about, the sanctuary cities. Now, you and I have talked about this extensively. So we think our bill, our House bill, will be a good starting ground for this negotiation. And I, too, want to commend you for bringing everybody together. I think what we don't want to see happen is for the conditions for DACA to occur again. We want to get security done so we don't have to deal with this problem five more years down the road. So thank you, sir.
Well, there are so many points of agreement, and a lot of it's common sense, and I really think we're going to come out very well. David Perdue, do you have something to say?
Well, yeah, my observation is that three times in the last 11 years, well-intentioned people, some of whom are in this room.
All right, this is Senator David Perdue. Now, I want to say he's from Indiana, but I'm not sure. So let me look it up. David Perdue. He's a Republican from Georgia. All right. He's married to Bonnie Perdue. I don't know who she is. But he sits in a seat that was occupied by Saxby Chambliss, who's a pretty interesting human being himself. So here he goes.
Attempted to do what we're starting to try to do today, and we fail. And I think the difference is their mission creep ended up in an effort that became too comprehensive. And so today, my encouragement for all of us is to do what Dick has been trying to do and talks about repeatedly, and that is to limit the scope of this. And I like the idea that both sides have pressure to solve the DACA issue. But I think the bigger issue here is not just the DACA issue, but what can we do to start the path to the steps that solve this immigration problem? For several reasons. There are social issues, there are political issues, there are economic issues about our workforce that have to be addressed.
but limiting this to the legal immigration side and combining the balance between various solutions on DACA, Dreamers, if it gets in the conversation, as well as border security and chain migration. I think therein lies the balance of a good deal that can be done. And I agree with Dick. I don't think it's going to take long to get it done if we just locked ourselves in a room and made it happen.
I think you're right. I think it can be done very quickly. Would anybody have anything to say prior to the press leaving?
Anybody? Mr. President, I just have one comment.
Yes.
Okay, the press is not leaving anytime soon. So he asked them to leave once. They didn't leave. I'm not sure how that happens. And so that's his second overture. But again, this thing will go on again for approximately another 30 minutes.
Senator Durbin mentioned that lives are hanging in the balance. As we come up on the...
This is Representative Martha McSally. I don't know who Martha McSally is, so let me introduce her to you. Martha McSally. Martha Elizabeth McSally is a retired United States Air Force colonel who is a Republican member of the United States House of Representatives. She participated in Operation Southern Watch, Operation Allied Force, and Operation Enduring Freedom. So she is from Rhode Island.
January 19th deadline, the lives that are hanging in the balance are those of our military that are needing the equipment and the funding and everything they need in order to keep us safe. And we should not be playing politics on this issue to stop our military from getting the funding that they need. I think we have the right people in the room to solve this issue. The deadline is March 5th. Let's roll up our sleeves and work together on this. But those who need us right now before the January 19th deadline is our military. And let's not play politics with that. Let's give them what they need to keep us safe.
Okay, good. I think a lot of people would agree with that. We need our military. I can't say more than ever before. We had wars, right, Lindsay? We had a lot of other areas and times, but we need our military desperately. Our military has been very depleted. We're rebuilding, and we're building it up quickly, and we're negotiating much better deals with your purveyors and with your manufacturers and with your equipment makers, much better than it was before. I look at boats that started off at $1.5 billion, and they're up to $18 billion, and they're still not finished. In this case, a particular aircraft carrier, I think it's outrageous. So we're very much agreeing with you on that, Martha. Would anybody like to say yes? Steny, go ahead.
I want to follow up on that. No Democrats that...
Okay, Steny Hoyer again.
...don't want to make sure that the military is funded properly. And over the last 4 years, we had an agreement between Mr. Ryan and Senator Murray, Speaker Ryan, that we understand that our military is critically important, but we also understand that our domestic issues, whether it's education, whether it's health care, whether it's the environment, whether it's transportation and infrastructure, they're important as well. And both the defense and non-defense sides of the budget are hurt when you have a CR because they cannot plan. And they cannot let contracts if they don't have any money to do so. Very frankly, I think Ms. McSally is correct, but what we ought to have done over the last 6 months, particularly when we did the September, and we gave 90 days, is to reach some agreement on what the caps are going to be. The Murray-Ryan agreements were parity. We believe that's very important. So we can get to where we should get and want to get there, but we ought to have an agreement based upon what the last two...
But, Steny, we do have to take politics out of the military. We need that military. You know, all the other things we talk about, we're not going to be here if we don't have the right military. And we need our military, and we need it stronger than ever before, and we're ready to do it, but we have to take politics out of the military. One thing that I think we can really get along with on a bipartisan basis, and maybe I'm stronger in this than a lot of the people on the Republican side, but I will tell you we have great support from the Republicans, is infrastructure. I think we can do a great infrastructure bill. I think we're going to have a lot of support from both sides, and I'd like to get it done as quickly as possible. Yes, John?
President, I too want to thank you for getting us together. You made the point last week when Republicans were meeting with you that why are we continuing to have these meetings just among ourselves when what we need to do to get to a solution is to meet as we are today, as you insisted, on a bipartisan basis. But part of my job is to count votes in the Senate. And as you know, we hosted the leadership at Camp David this weekend. I believe both the Speaker and Majority Leader McConnell made crystal clear that they would not
they would not proceed with a bill on the floor of the Senate or the House unless it had your support, unless you would sign it. So that's, I think, the picture that we need to be looking through, the lens we need to be looking through is not only what can we agree to among ourselves on a bipartisan basis, but what will you sign into law? Because we all want to get to a solution here, and we realize the clock is ticking. But I think that, for me, frames the issue about as well as I can.
Thank you. Very well said. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm here, Chuck, so importantly, is exactly that. I mean, normally you wouldn't have a president coming to this meeting. Normally, frankly, you'd have Democrats, Republicans, and maybe nothing would get done. You know, our system lends itself to not getting things done. And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But, of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks. Because this system, and I'm there with you, because this system really lends itself to not getting along. It lends itself to hostility and anger, and they hate the Republicans and they hate the Democrats. And, you know, in the old days of earmarks, you can say what you want about certain presidents and others, where they all talk about they went out to dinner at night and they all got along and they passed bills. That was an earmark system. And maybe we should think about it, and we have to put better controls because it got a little bit out of hand, but...
Okay, when you heard this discussed last night, you heard constantly, you know, the reference to the bridge to nowhere and whatnot. But you've heard, I don't know how many people have come on All Marine Radio and talk about Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan getting after each other, but going out and having dinner and or having a drink at night and talking about problems and a way to solve them. And that was the earmark system. Now, most infamous to that, and again, it's politics, so it gets into public crosshairs, and then they all run from it. Is there a better version of earmarks? Is there a way to do it so that you can not have this gridlock that we have that seems to be a function of the media and how people get elected? And so when you put that together, right, you can't oppose things like that. So, and you now have a system where, you know, and again, sequestration is a perfect example. Sequestration was put into place, you know, with the idea that it would never happen. There's no way that Congress would allow these kind of draconian cuts to go into, to go into motion. That this is a burn it down Armageddon scenario. Designed to make sure that they did pass a budget. Well, how many years are we into sequestration that we can't pass a budget? It's ridiculous. So what needs to happen? What changes to the system? Now, I don't know if earmarks are the answer. I do know that, and I'll quote Secretary Mattis, no external enemy to the United States of America has done the damage to the Department of Defense that sequestration has. And so the number one enemy of the Department of Defense is Congress. Why? Because they can't cooperate. Why is that? Because the system we now have is a burn-it-down system, and so how do you get them out of that? How do you rescue them from that? Because they certainly can't rescue themselves. And is that just a political reality? So what you hear is, well, we need to elect better people that'll go do the citizens' work. It ain't happening. So I don't know what needs to change. And I would consider anything that gets us out of where we're at, because it is destroying the Department of Defense.
Maybe that brings people together, because our system right now, the way it's set up, will never bring people together. Now, I think we're going to get this done, DACA. I hope we're going to get infrastructure done in the same way. But I think you should look at a form of earmarks. I see Lindsay nodding very happily, yes. A lot of the pros are saying that if you want to get along and if you want to get this country really rolling again, you have to look at a different form, because this is obviously out of control. The levels of hatred. And I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking, you go back throughout the 8 years of Obama and you go before that. The animosity and the hatred between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, I remember when I used to go out in Washington and I'd see Democrats having dinner with Republicans and they were best friends and everybody got along. You don't see that too much anymore, in all due respect. You really don't see that. When was the last time you took a Republican out there? Why don't you guys go out and have dinner tonight?
Well, I think the only ones.
But you don't see it. So maybe, and very importantly, totally different from this meeting, because we're going to get DACA done. I hope we're going to get DACA done, and we're going to all try very hard. But maybe you should start bringing back a concept of earmarks. It's going to bring you together. You're going to do it honestly. You're going to get rid of the problems that the other system had, and it did have some problems. But one thing it did is it brought everyone together. And this country has to be brought together. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Lindsey?
Well,
all right. This is Senator Lindsey Graham. He is a Republican. He's a former candidate for president. He's a member of the Senate Armed Service Committee, and if you follow the Department of Defense and things military in the United States, you know Lindsey Graham. So here he is.
6:40, I'm going to go to Menendez's office, and he's taking me to dinner.
Wow.
And he's buying.
Sounds like fun.
And he didn't know that, but he's buying. We're going to board, and you're all welcome to come.
No, I think we can usually get bipartisan agreement when the other guy buys.
I think it's a very important thing because our system is designed right now that everybody should hate each other. And we can't have that. You know, we have a great country. We have a country that's doing very well. In many respects, we're just hitting a new high on the stock market again. And that means jobs. I look at the stock. I don't look at the stocks. I look at the jobs. I look at the 401ks. I look at what's happening. Where police come up to me and they say, thank you, you're making me look like a financial genius. Literally. Meaning about them. And their wives never thought that was possible, right? No, the country is doing well in so many ways, but there's such divisiveness, such division. And I really believe we can solve that. I think this system is a very bad system in terms of getting together. And I'm going to leave it up to you, but I really believe you can do something to bring it together. Yeah?
And other than going to dinner with Bob, I've been doing this for 10 years. I don't think I've seen a better chance to get it done than I do right now.
Because of you. John's right. I'm not going to support a bill if you don't support it. I've had my head beat out a bunch. I'm still standing. I'm Lindsey Grahamnesty, Lindsey Gomez, you name every name you want to give to me, it's been assigned to me. And I'm still standing. The people of South Carolina want a result. How could I get elected? I've been for a pathway to citizenship for 11 million people because I have no animosity toward them. I don't want crooks. I don't want bad hombres. I want to get a merit-based immigration system to make sure we can succeed in the 21st century. I'm willing to be more than fair to the 11 million. I just don't want to do this every 20 years. Now, we made the decision, Mr. President, not to do it comprehensively. I think that's a smart decision, but a hard decision. We passed three comprehensive bills out of the Senate with over 65 votes. They go to the House and die, and I'm not being disparaging to my House colleagues. This is tough politics if you're a Republican House member turning on the radio. To my Democratic friends, thanks for coming. The Resist Movement hates this guy. They don't want him to be successful at all. You turn on Fox News, and I can hear the drumbeat coming. Right-wing radio and TV talk show hosts are going to beat the crap out of us because it's going to be amnesty all over again. I don't know if the Republican and Democratic Party can define love, but I think what we can do is do what the American people want us to do. 62% of the Trump voters support a pathway to citizenship for the DACA kids if you have strong borders. You have created an opportunity here, Mr. President, and you need to close the deal.
Thank you, Lindsey. You know, it's very interesting because I do have people that are, let's just to use a very common term, very far right and very far left. They're very unhappy about what we're doing, but I really don't believe they have to be because I really think this sells itself. And, you know, when you talk about comprehensive immigration reform, which is where I would like to get to eventually, if we do the right bill here, we are not very far away. You know, we've done most of it. You want to know the truth, Dick? If we do this properly, DACA, you're not so far away from comprehensive immigration reform. And if you want to take it that further step, I'll take the heat. I don't care. I don't care. I'll take all the heat you want to give me. And I'll take the heat off both the Democrats and the Republicans. My whole life has been heat. I like heat in a certain way. But I will. I mean, you are somewhat more traditional politicians than they were 2.5 years ago. I was never thinking in terms of politics. Now I'm a politician. You people have been doing it, many of you, all your lives. I'll take all the heat you want. But you are not that far away from comprehensive immigration reform. And if you wanted to go that final step, I think you should do it. And if you want to study earmarks to bring us all together so we all get together and do something, I think you should study it. Chuck, did you have something to say?
I'd like to talk about the reality of the whole situation. And
all right, this is Senator Chuck Grassley. And he's been much in the news. He and his colleague Dianne Feinstein last week. So out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, the first charges were referred last week. And then in response to that, Senator Feinstein, who said she was not made aware of those charges coming out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, released the entire transcript of the Fusion GPS transcript. Which to me, I didn't think somebody could unilaterally do that. I guess they can. Anyway, Chuck Grassley is from Iowa, and so here are his comments.
Take off from what Cornyn and Graham have said of the necessity of you working with us, and you're doing that by having this meeting and other meetings as well. But we've always talked in the United States Senate about the necessity of getting 60 votes, and that's pretty darn tough. But if we would write a bill that you don't like and you veto it, we're talking about a 67-vote threshold, right. Two-thirds in the United States Senate. So that's the reality of negotiating in good faith and getting something you can sign. The second reality is the March 5th date that's coming up. Because if we don't do some good faith negotiation and make progress and get a bill on the floor of the United States Senate, our leader is going to have to bring up either the House bill or the bill that some of us has introduced in the United States Senate, and we're going to have a vote on it. And those people that don't want to vote to legalize DACA kids are going to have to explain why that they haven't wanted to protect the vulnerable people that we're all here talking about. We're talking about everything except doing something for the DACA kids. You know, I would vote for a path to citizenship, which isn't very easy for me, but I would do it just as an effort. But there's certain things that we've got to guarantee that we're going to do.
That's going to be brought up. I really believe that will be brought up as part of what we're talking about at some point. It's an incentive for people to do a good job, if you want to know the truth. That whole path is an incentive for people, and they're not all kids. I mean, you know, we used to talk about kids. They're not really kids. You have them 39, 40 years old in some cases. But it would be an incentive for people to work hard, do a good job. So, you know, that could very well be brought up.
Talk about legalizing people here that didn't break the law because their parents, who broke the law, brought them here. And we ought to be talking about what we can do for the people that had no fault of their own and get the job done and not worry about a lot of other things that we're involved in. And that means that we got to make sure that we tell the American people when we're taking this step that we're doing something that all the people agree to, you know.
Mr. President,
let me just say, I think...
Okay, so now you're talking about everybody feels strongly about dealing with the DACA thing, but you can't do it again, right? So now watch, you're going to see different people hop in here and try to separate those issues again. So Senator Feinstein, principal among them. This is Steny Hoyer from Representative Democratic type from Maryland who hops in again.
Dick and I agree with what Chuck Grassley just said.
It's hard to believe. When was the last time that happened?
We need to take care of these DACA kids, and we all agree on that. 86% of the American public agrees on that. With all due respect, Bob and Mike and Lindsay, there are some things that you're proposing that are going to be very controversial and will be an impediment to agreement.
But you're going to negotiate those things. You're going to sit down. You're going to say, listen, we can't agree here. We'll give you half of that. You're going to negotiate those
President,
things.
Comprehensive means comprehensive.
No, we're not talking about comprehensive.
We are talking about comprehensive.
If you want to go there, it's okay because you're not that far away.
President, many of the things that are mentioned ought to be a part of the negotiations regarding comprehensive immigration reform.
If you want to take it a step further, you may, I'm going to have to rely on you, you may complicate it, and you may delay DACA somewhat.
I don't want to do that.
All right, so now it's like, is this going to be comprehensive? Is it going to be phased? What are we going to do? And that's, I mean, how awesome is this, though, to listen to this discussion? It's what we thought we paid them for. This is Dick Durbin, though.
We need to phase.
Senator from Illinois.
Is this? I think the first phase is with Chuck and Steny and I have mentioned others as well. We have a deadline looming and a lot of lives hanging. We can agree on some very fundamental and important things together on border security, on shame, on the future of diversity visas. Comprehensive, though, I worked on it for 6 months with Michael Bennett and a number of Bob Menendez and Schumer and McCain and Jeff Flake, and it took us 6 months to put it together. We don't have 6 months for the DACA.
We're not talking about comprehensive. Take a look at our bill.
Well, you mentioned a number of factors that are going to be controversial, as Steny has mentioned.
But you're going to negotiate. I think you're going to negotiate. And maybe we'll agree and maybe we won't. I mean, you know, it's possible we're not going to agree with you, and it's possible we are, but there should be no reason for us not to get this done. And Chuck, I will say, when this group comes back, hopefully with an agreement, this group and others from the Senate, from the House, comes back with an agreement, I'm signing it. I mean, I will be signing it. I'm not going to say, oh, gee, I want this or I want that. I'll be signing it because I have a lot of confidence in the people in this room that you're going to come out with something really good. Senator, would you like to say something? Diane?
I would. As you know.
All right, this is Diane Feinstein.
So we tried for comprehensive immigration reform.
Senator from the state of California.
In the Senate. It was on the floor. There were a number of amendments. It got a lot of attention in the Judiciary Committee, and then the House didn't take it up. I think there needs to be a willingness on both sides. And I don't know how you would feel about this, but I'd like to ask the question. What about a clean DACA bill now, and with a commitment that we go into a comprehensive immigration reform procedure like we did back, oh, I remember when Kennedy was here, and it was really a major, major effort, and it was a great disappointment that it went nowhere.
I have no problem. I think that's basically what Dick is saying.
Okay, so now, in my opinion, this is Senator Feinstein trying to get the DACA piece moved through, right, which the Democrats want, and delay the discussion about border security for part of the comprehensive bill, which they could then try to kill. But they would have their piece DACA through, which means a victory for them. The president is thinking something else, that DACA and security are the same thing. So watch this little thing play out.
And we're going to come up with DACA. We're going to do DACA. And then we can start immediately on the phase two, which would be comprehensive.
Would you be agreeable to that?
Yeah, I would like to do that. Go ahead. I think a lot of people would like to see that. But I think we have to do DACA first.
Mr. President, you need to be...
Okay. Now, you're going to hear Representative McCarthy, who's the House Majority Leader, now hop in here real quick.
Clear, though, I think what Senator Feinstein's asking here, when we talk about just DACA, we don't want to be back here 2 years later. You have to have security, as the Secretary would tell you.
But I think that's what you say.
I think you're saying DACA without security. Are you talking about security as well?
Well, I think if we have some meaningful comprehensive immigration reform, that's really where the security goes.
So the answer to that was, no, I wasn't talking about security. Security goes in comprehensive.
And if we could get the DACA bill, because March is coming and people are losing their status every day.
But let's be honest with you. Security was voted on
just a few years ago. And no disrespect, there's people in the room on the other side of the aisle who voted for it. If I recall, Senator Clinton voted for it. So I don't think that's comprehensive. I think that's dealing with DACA at the same time. I think that's really what the president's making. It's kind of like three pillars. DACA, because we're all in the room want to do it. border security, so we're not back out here, and chain migration. It's just three items, and then everything else that's comprehensive is kind of moved to the side. So I believe when the president talks about DACA and lottery,
that is what you should end merit. I mean, if you can, add merit-based.
No, I don't think, I don't know, who's going to argue with merit-based? Who can argue with merit-based? Diane, go ahead.
Do you really think that there can be agreement to get DACA passed in time? I wanted to ask Mr. McCarthy a question. Do you really think there can be agreement on those three difficult subjects you raise in time to get DACA passed and effective? So
yes, because you have heard from Leader McConnell and Speaker Ryan, who said they will put the bill onto the floor if the president agrees to it. And us getting to the room, I haven't seen us be this close and having this discussion in quite a few years, the last 4 years. So I think, yes, we can make this happen. We all know it. We've done it before. Look, you and I spent a long time. We did probably one of the most difficult things to do in California, water. And I believe we can get there, and we can just keep working each day on this.
Mr. President,
I think what we're all saying is we'll do DACA, and we can certainly start comprehensive immigration reform the following afternoon, okay? We'll take an hour off, and then we'll start. But I do believe that. Because once we get DACA done, if it's done properly with, you know, security and everything else, if it's done properly, we have taken a big chunk of comprehensive out of the negotiation. And I don't think it's going to be that complicated. Yes.
To be very clear, though.
Go ahead.
In my opinion, we'll be right back here either 5 years, 30 years, whatever. But this... The chain migration is so insidious. It is the fundamental flaw in the immigration policy of the United States.
This is Senator David Perdue.
Right. If any conversation about DACA is being held without that consideration, I agree with border security as well, but any conversation about that is not going to go anywhere in the United States Senate. And if we think we're going to divide one side versus the other, that's just not going to happen on this issue.
David, I think chain migration has taken a very big hit over the last 6 months. You know, people are seeing what's happening. People, for instance, the man on the West Side Highway that killed the people and so badly wounded. You know, it's incredible when they talk about wounded. They don't say that arms are off and legs are off. One person lost two legs. You know, nobody talks about this. They said eight died, but they don't talk about the 12 people that have no legs, no arms, and all of the things. So I'm talking about everybody. I really believe that when you talk about the subject that we're all mentioning right now, I think they had... how many people came in? 22 to 24 people came in through him. He's a killer. He's a guy who ran over eight died. 10 to 12 are really badly injured. So I really think that a lot of people are going to agree with us now on that subject. I really don't see there's a big...
70% of Americans want the immigration policy to be the family, the nuclear family, and the worker. 70%.
Then the chain migration, though, has taken a very big hit in the last... year with what's happening. I mean, you're looking at these killers, whether you like or not. We're looking at these killers, and then you see 18 people came in, 22 people came in, 30 people came in with this one person that just killed a lot of people. I really don't believe there are a lot of Democrats that are going to be supporting chain migration anymore.
Should we have the Homeland Security Secretary?
Yes. You know, I just have something on border security. I just want to try to make sure we're all linking.
All right. Now, this is... this is our current Secretary of Homeland Security. She was just recently appointed, and hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. Her name is Kirstjen Nielsen. All right. So she's speaking right now. She's seated actually right across from the president.
The reason that border security is so important to have as part of this discussion is that it doesn't solve the problem if we can apprehend people, but we can't remove them. So we need the wall system, which is some physical infrastructure, as the president described, personnel and technology, but we have to close those legal loopholes, because the effect of that is this incredible pull up from Central America that just continues to exacerbate the problem. So border security has to be part of this, or we will be here again in 3, 4, 5 years. Again, maybe, unfortunately, sooner. The other point I would just make is the president asked DHS, he asked the men and women of DHS, what do you need to do your job? Congress, the American people have entrusted to you the security of our country. What is it that you need? The list that we have provided is what we need to do our mission that you asked us to do. It's not less than, it's not more than, it is what we need to close those loopholes to be able to protect our country. So I would just encourage everyone, much more eloquently than I can, described all the reasons why we all, I think, here are committed to helping the DACA population. But to truly solve the problem, it's got to be in conjunction with border security.
Jeff?
I would just echo what my son here. For those of us who have been through comprehensive reform, that was 6-7 months of every night negotiating, staff on weekends, and a lot of the things we're talking about on border security and some of the interior things have trade-offs, and we made those during that process. I don't see how we get there before March 5th.
I think that's why we're making a phase two. We do a phase one, which is DACA and security, and we do phase two, which is comprehensive.
Now, what's amazing is this is still going. This is still going on. This is discussion about live in front of the nation yesterday, and it was jaw dropping because they never do this.
Immigration, and I think we should go right to it. I really do. We do one, and we then do the other. But we go right to it. Yes.
Mr. President, I think it's important to thank you for your flexibility and your leadership. And so I think what all of us have to do is have.
I can't tell who this is because there's somebody's head in the way of his name tape.
Have the same willingness to have a little bit of flexibility to get this issue done. And obviously, I want to do a lot more than DACA. But the urgent thing now, for obvious reasons, are these young men and women who we have to deal with first and foremost. And to Steady's point, there are two issues which we keep hearing that everybody agrees to. That is dealing with these individuals in a permanent, real solution and border security. So I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do that. And I'm hoping that that would then lead us to Senator Cotton's point of there's a lot of lack of trust. If we can get real border security and deal with these individuals, we can get that done, then I think, my gosh, it all opens up to do a lot more things in the future for the American people.
Mr. President, I just want to reemphasize what Secretary Nielsen said. It is so important that...
This is Representative Bob Goodlatte. And again, it was he is the chair of a committee that's bringing legislation out today.
I understand when you talk about border security, if you apprehend somebody at the border, but then you cannot send them back outside the United States, even though they're unlawfully present in the United States, you have not solved this problem because they're then released into the interior of the country and the problem persists. And that sends a message back to wherever they've come from.
I agree.
They come do it.
You know what? We're going to negotiate that out.
Absolutely.
I agree, and I think a lot of people agree on both sides. Henry?
Thank you, Mr. President. And I agree with my good friend Mario.
Okay, this is Representative Henry Cuellar. He's from Texas. He's a Democrat, and he's the one that got into the little war of words with General Kelly. And General Kelly, at the time when he was Department of Homeland Security, he suggested that if people had criticism for the Department of Homeland Security, they should level it at him. But he was tired of hearing DHS agents and ICE agents, Border Patrol agents, called jackbooted thugs, references certainly to Nazi Germany. And he said if that was all that elected representatives had to say, they could just shut up. Cuellar took him to task at a committee meeting, and Kelly didn't back down from it. He said, this is what I'm addressing. He didn't apologize for it. So this is the same guy, Cuellar, from Texas. He's a little condescending here. His comments are interesting.
Sense that if we focus on DACA and border security, I think we can address this. Issues of clean migration or the other issues, I think that should be looked at the second phase. But again, I said this with all due respect to both Democrats and Republicans, but being from the border.
Okay. What's the rule when somebody says, with all due respect? Something disrespectful is following shortly.
I always get a kick at people that go down, spend a few hours there. They think they know the border better than Cornyn or Martha, some of us there, because we've lived there all our lives. Let me explain this. For example, if you look at the latest DEA, if you're worried about drugs, look at the latest DEA report. more drugs come through the ports of entry than in between ports. But we're not even talking about ports of entry, number one.
Our buildings.
I'm just saying. Ports. Let's finish this. And some of us have been working this longer than some other folks. Number one, if you look at the 11 or 12 million undocumented aliens, which is the second phase, 40% of them came through visa overstay. So you can put the most beautiful wall out there. It's not going to stop them there because they'll either come by plane, boat, or vehicle itself. Yes, and I know. So the other thing is, the other thing that we've got to look at, the wall itself, Mr. President, if you talk to your Border Patrol chief or the former Border Patrol chiefs, I've asked them, how much time does the wall buy you? They'll say a couple minutes or a few seconds. And this is our own Border Patrol chiefs that have said that.
Not right? Mine. But mine is not clear the wall works.
They say without the wall, we cannot have border security. And all you have to do is ask Israel. Look what happened with them. Without the wall, you can't have
border security. All right. Homeland appropriations, your chief was there, and the former chiefs have all said that. Now, the other thing is, if you look at, this is where the wall is.
Mr. President?
If you look at where the walls are at right now, this is where the activity is, where the walls are at right now.
We have massive miles of area where people are pouring through. Now, one of the good things, because of our rhetoric...
So Cuellar takes on the whole notion of a wall.
...or because of the perceived, you know, my perceived attitude... Fewer people are trying to come through. That's a great thing.
Right.
And that, therefore, I mean, our numbers have been fantastic, maybe for all the right reasons.
But let me just finish my thought. I want to ask you that we're playing, you saw the game last night. It was a good game last night. We're playing defense on the one-yard line called the U.S. border. We spend over $18 billion a year on the border. If we think about playing defense on the 20-yard line, if you look at what Mexico has done, they stop thousands of people on the southern border with Guatemala. We ought to be looking at working with
them. We stopped them. You know why? Mexico told me, the president told me, everybody tells me, not as many people are coming through their southern border because they don't think they can get through our southern border, and therefore they don't come. That's what happened with Mexico. We did Mexico a tremendous favor.
We actually put appropriations to help them with the southern border.
The point is, I know, we always give everybody. Every other nation gets money but ours.
But finally,
we're always looking for money, but we give the money to other nations.
But finally, the last one
that we have to stop
is, instead of playing defense on the one-yard line, if you look, this is your material. We know where the stash houses are at. We know where the hotels are at. We know where they are across the river.
And we're going after them.
Why play defense on the one-yard line?
We're going after them like never before. We're going after the stash houses.
We focus on DACA. We can work on the other things separately, on sensible border security. Listen to the folks that are from the border.
And you folks are going to have to hear one voice. You folks are going to have to come up with a solution. And if you do, I'm going to sign that solution.
Yes.
We have a lot of smart people in this room, really smart people. We have a lot of people that are good people, big hearts. They want to get it done. I think almost everybody, I can think of one or two I don't particularly like, but that's okay. No, I think everybody. Look, everybody wants to solution. I'm trying to figure that out. Everybody wants a solution. You want it, Henry,
yes,
and I want it. I think we have a great group of people to sit down and get this done. In fact, when the media leaves, which I think should be probably pretty soon, I liked opening it up to the media because I think they see more than anything else that we're all very much on a similar page, not the same page. And Henry, I think we can really get something done.
Yes,
so why don't we ask the media to leave? We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Very quickly, Mr. President, just to clarify, is there any agreement without the wall?
No, there wouldn't be.
The wall has to be there. You need it. John, you need the wall. I mean, it's wonderful. I'd love not to build the wall, but you need the wall. And I will tell you this, the ICE officers and the Border Patrol agents, I had them just recently up. They say if you don't have the wall, you know, in certain areas, obviously, that aren't protected by nature, if you don't have the wall, you cannot have security. You just can't have it. It doesn't work. And part of the problem we have is walls and fences that we currently have are in very bad shape. They're broken. We have to get them fixed or rebuilt. But you know, you speak to the agents, and I spoke to all of them. I lived with them. They endorsed me for president, which they've never done before, the Border Patrol agents and ICE. They both endorsed Trump, and they never did that before. And I have a great relationship with them. They say, sir, without the wall, security doesn't work. We're all wasting time. Now, that doesn't mean 2,000 miles of wall, because you just don't need that because of nature, because of mountains and rivers and lots of other things. But we need a certain portion of that border to have the wall. If we don't have it, you can never have security. You can never stop that portion of drugs that comes through that area. Yes, it comes through planes and lots of other ways and ships, but a lot of it comes through the southern border. You can never fix the situation without additional wall, and we have to fix existing wall that we already have.
So you would not support what Senator Feinstein asked you, which would be a clean DACA bill that doesn't...
No, I think a clean DACA bill to me is a DACA bill where we take care of the 800,000 people. They're actually not necessarily young people. Everyone talks about young. You know, they could be 40 years old, 41 years old, but they're also 16 years old. But I think, to me, a clean bill is a bill of DACA. We take care of them, and we also take care of security. That's very important. And I think the Democrats want security, too. I mean, we started off with Steny saying, we want security also. Everybody wants security. And then we can go to comprehensive later on, and maybe that is a longer subject and a bigger subject, and I think we can get that done, too. But we'll get it done at a later date. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Mr. President, I'm Senator Hirono from Hawaii.
Yes, I am.
That's the only immigrant serving in the United
States. I don't remember what she said her name was, but she's a... I will get it here in a second. She is an immigrant. Senator from HA Hawaii. Her name is Mazie Hirono. She's a Democrat. Here she is.
United States Senate right now, I would like nothing better than for us to get to comprehensive immigration reform, but what I'm hearing around the table right now is a commitment to resolving the DACA situation because there is a sense of urgency. Now, you have put it out there that that you want $18 billion for a wall or else there will be no DACA. Is that still your position?
Yeah, I can build it for less, by the way.
But you want...
I must tell you, I'm looking at these prices. Somebody said $42 billion. This is like the aircraft carrier. It started off at $1.5 billion, and it's now at $18 billion. No, we can do it for less. We can do a great job. We can do a great wall, but you need the wall, and I'm now getting involved. I like to build under budget, okay? I like to go under budget ahead of schedule. There's no reason for 7 years also. I heard the other day, please don't do that to me. 7 years to build a wall. We can build the wall in 1 year.
Yes, sir.
And we can build it for much less money than what they're talking about. And any excess funds that we'll have a lot of, whether it's a Walman rink or whether it's any, I built under budget and I built ahead of schedule. There is no reason to ever mention 7 years again, please. I heard that. I said I wanted to come out with a major news conference, Tom, yesterday. No, it can go up quickly, it can go up effectively, and we can fix a lot of the areas right now that are really satisfactory if we renovate those walls and those fences.
Can you tell us how many miles of wall you're contemplating, whether it's 17 million or that?
Yeah, we're doing a study on that right now. But there are large areas where you don't need a wall because you have a mountain and you have a river. You have a violent river and you don't need it.
Okay?
It seems to me, not much has actually changed here in terms of your positions.
No, I think it's changed. I think my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you beat Oprah, by the way? Yeah, I'll beat Oprah. Oprah would be a lot of fun. I know her very well. You know, I did one of her last shows. She had Donald Trump. This is before politics. Her last week. And she had Donald Trump, and my family was very nice. No, I like Oprah. I don't think she's going to run. I don't think she's going to run. I know her very well.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Let's wait about that for the president. Yeah, it's phase two. I think comprehensive will be phase two. I think I really agree with Dick. I think we get the one thing done, and then we go into comprehensive the following day.
But this thing doesn't end, right? It just keeps going, and they just don't do this. It was honestly, it was astounding to sit and watch it.
I think it'll happen.
Thank you.
Yes. Wait one second. Thank you all very much. I hope we gave you enough material. This should cover you for about 2 weeks.
So there you have it. 10 minutes over here. But honestly, I wanted to play that today because of its unique nature. And I think that that it's what we – why don't we see more of that? Why can't that be more a part of the discourse on a regular basis that is a part of the national discussion? Why can't we make it go? Why can't we be better? Why can't we do the business of the country? And again, and you heard a wide-ranging discussion from, you know, maybe a system such as Aramark's, there is some merit in some of that. Maybe it's a different form. Maybe it's not the system that got us a bridge to nowhere. Maybe, but it is some other form of that allows a different tone or maybe business in a different way in Washington, D.C. I think we all know that things don't work well as they sit today. So, yeah. How about that? Crazy. As a president, and again, so to me, the questions were, part of that is the president answering people that say he's not competent and he can't do the things that a president needs to do. Clearly what you saw out of that was somebody who was engaged and intellectually up to it and able to sit in with all those senators and congressmen and in an articulate way and as in a presidential way conduct that meeting. Why, though, would senators like Feinstein, like Menendez, Republican or Democratic senators allow themselves to go to that thing? I don't understand that. What was the point of it? Also, why no McConnell? No, I thought it was good because to me, are they enablers of a bad system? I don't really know how the leadership of both parties works on Capitol Hill. They have been content to do nothing. So, anyway, it was interesting, to say the least. We'll see what comes out of it. My thanks to Jeff Schogel for coming on. You'll hear my interview with him in approximately 30 minutes. So, don't touch that dial. He's an interesting guy, and is now he no longer hangs his shingle under the banner of Marine Corps Times. He hangs his shingle under the banner of Task and Purpose. You can find his work there, and he does great. He does great stuff. He is a he's an interesting guy, to say the least. So, with so don't touch that dial. You'll hear his interview, and then if you tuned in just at the end of what you just heard, it'll replay here in a couple hours. So. Interesting show today. Schogel's thoughts about the Marine Corps, very, very interesting. And also about the Navy. He's headed to cover the Pentagon and with a little bit broader lens relative to the DOD than simply the Marine Corps. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow on a Wednesday. All Marine Radio over and out.